Good evening. James McCanny here with my Science Hour, September 19th, 2013. Many topics to cover tonight. I got some listener mail. I want to, good questions from listeners. We'll talk about that. A few issues with the sun, the solar activity. But pretty much, once again, the sun extremely quiet. And this is important to observe this because, for example, a number of weeks ago, a comet came in, surprised everybody, an unexpected visitor came in and dove into the sun and caused a CME, basically. And, of course, standard science denies it. Oops, it happened before the comet got there, so it couldn't have been the comet. Well, no, that's the whole point of an electrical discharge. A spark plug effect happens before the comet gets to the sun, and because it's discharging the solar capacitor. Action at a distance. Boy, they just can't get that concept down. Them tier two scientists don't quite understand that special concept. Their little brains just cannot manage that action at a distance. So, at any rate, what's important, though, is to note that the CMEs are only occurring now when the comets come by. And it's always coincidence. Oh, couldn't have been related. But the CMEs and the real solar activity just is not happening. It's just not happening. So, at any rate, I wanted to start with kind of a little, I don't know if you'd call it a kind of a story or a situation comedy, let's put it that way. Just imagine that you're a singer or an actor or a comedian or somebody on stage, and that every time you went on stage, someone jumped up in the audience, the same person all the time, and said, oh, he said this, that's really important, listen to that. Or if it's, a comedian, say the comedian gets up and he's doing his routine, and everything he says is funny, somebody jumps up in the front row and looks around and says, oh, he said this, and isn't that funny, it's really funny. And you know, does this to the comedian, or say a singer, comes to town, does a concert, and somebody gets up in the front row and start singing really loud to the audience along with the singer, because, you know, singing all the words to the song. And then when the people go, what are you doing, you know, you moron? He says, well, I'm trying to get the word out that this person is a good singer or a good comedian. What he's saying is funny, and I want you to all know it. And then the people are like, well, wait a minute. We already see that. We're already laughing. You don't have to repeat what the singer did, or the actor, or the comedian, or whatever, the person on stage. You don't have to repeat that and get up and jump up and down. We're here to see the person. You understand what I'm saying? And so, anyway, my point is that this is what's going on the internet. So we got some little clowns running around trying to repeat Jim McCanny and then add stuff to it. Oh, it's the end of the world. Planet X is coming. Let me see. You know, everything is Planet X. Every comet is Planet X. Every comet is Nibiru, according to these people. And, of course, what I've figured out over time is that these people are in mind control programs. They come out of the woodwork. They think God has given them a vocation, that they have to warn everybody about Planet X. And then so they have no scientific background. They don't have any real information. It's alarmism, but this is very important for the government misinformation program about comets and science. It's very important for them to have these kinds of people. So if they didn't have these people coming out of the woodwork naturally and then finding them and then starting to put money into them and time and handlers, etc., who can egg them on and, oh, you're really doing important work. And then if say I turn around and say something, and this has happened numerous, many, many times with me, where someone will start emailing or something like this, and I'll say, look, you know, I don't have people that represent me, I don't have email groups, and for that reason, because people start emailing and they think that you're good buddies with these people. Well, they're always emailing about Jim McCanny. They must really know Jim McCanny, and no, they don't. I don't have groups like that. I don't have people that represent me. But anyway, the point is, when you confront them, then it's like, oh, they get very defensive. And that's a type of a brain. It's kind of a demented brain pattern. And then they get offended. And then it's like, well, Jim McCanny doesn't want to get the word out. Jim McCanny's against getting the word out to the public. And then they turn on you. And it's a really, for they go from super fan to super against you and bad mouthing you and all of this. So it's really a bizarre situation. So anyway, and like I say, the government loves this because they use these people, because if they didn't exist, they'd have to go out and create them. So you have the Marshall Masters of the world that thinks he wrote the Colburn Bible and tries to sell it on Amazon. Or you have the John DiNardos of the world who try and copy what I do on my radio show every week and then try and send email lists. Or there's just a whole bunch of others not worth mentioning. But the people who are very much psychologically deranged people. And, you know, but like I say, when the government finds these people, and when I mean the government, I'm talking about the, you know, the think tank groups that manipulate public thought. Okay, that sets the stage for all the nutcase Planet X, end of the world, Mayan calendar, throw in everything in the kitchen sink. But that gives a wonderful platform for the NASA scientists to sit back and sound authoritative. They don't have to comment on anything. They can talk about the dirty snowball comet model. And this is what's going on today. So let's fast forward to today, Comet Ison. Right now, NASA is gearing up its campaign of information flowing out to the public. They're going to have coordinate an international viewing campaign amongst amateur astronomers. All of the astronomy organizations are gearing up. Their web pages are gearing up. And if you read them, and if you really didn't understand the baloney that is the basis of all of this, the Tier 2 science, then it looks pretty credible. And then they've got the little guys who go out and attack the nutcases. And, of course, they throw me in with that, along with the Mayan calendar, the Planet X, and that Ison is Nibiru, and it's going to crash into Earth, and it's bringing in. This past week, a thing supposedly came out of Russia, where they're quoting me as saying Comet Ison has a family of planets around it, that it's Nibiru, that it's going to crash into Earth. They have me saying this. There's also a YouTube video in which they quote, I'm quoted from stuff I've said, sound bites are taken out, and then they wrap it into all of this other misinformation. So, at any rate, that sets a wonderful stage. That just like greases the skids for the standard science community to come in. And I've come to conclude, I thought for a while, these people cannot really be this stupid to believe that comets are dirty snowballs or that the solar system formed all at one time with all the contradictions involved, or that hurricanes are formed from warm water. I mean, the Tier 2 science out there is phenomenal. So at any rate, but it greases the skids, all this nutcase stuff greases the skids for standard science to come in, and really, it looks pretty good compared to all the nutcase stuff. So anyway, I wanted to start with that little story about the comedian or the actor or the singer that, like I say, every time they get up to do a concert, some nutcase comes up in the front row and starts singing along and turning around and screaming to the audience, "Aren't they wonderful? Listen, they said this, or they sang this song. Isn't that wonderful?" You know, and everybody is like going, "Who's this person?" But the person thinks that they're doing a good job at getting the word out that this singer or actor is really good. You know, this is a very strange mental state of people who copy and then try and, you know, they're super fans. We call them Trekkies. There's another word in the industry, moths. Because a moth, what does it do? It flies around a streetlight and flutters all around. And if the light goes out, they quick fly to the next light and they'll flutter around that one. So moths is another name for that kind of nutcase in the industry. Okay, so enough of that. But this leads into the topic that the comet Ison, Tier 2 managed information scheme is rolling in. It's being rolled out. The carpet is being rolled out, so to speak. The one thing I noticed is there's no real information. Right now, comet Ison is approaching Mars. And we know that there's all kinds of equipment, something like 60 NASA-based telescopes and other observatory platforms, including the Hubble telescope and just a whole range of other telescopes and orbiting equipment, etc., are watching this comet. But they're only talking about, could it see the tail of the comet? A comet is a very complex animal. It has an electrical discharge passing through it. It has X-rays to the sunward side. It has luminosity. It has two tails, a plasma tail, and it also has the gaseous ion tail. In fact, in the ion tail, it has a flow, inward flow, of positive ions and an outward, much smaller flow of negative ions in another tail. These are illuminated because of the electrical discharge passing through the comet, and also as it gets near Mars, there could be particle exchange. In fact, Mars could go comet. And so the very finely tuned NASA equipment would be able to see this. But, of course, they're not going to talk about this. There could be electrical discharging between the comet and Mars. And so what does the nutcase, NASA-created nutcase scenario sound like? Oh, that it's going to change Mars' orbit and it'll crash towards Earth and crash into Earth. These are actually scenarios that occur on the Internet. Well, who's behind this? This is the misinformation campaigns, and they make it so nutty that NASA can get away with just presenting the bare bones minimum amount of information regarding comet Ison, and they sound brilliant. They sound like absolute geniuses. And in the process, dribbling out useless, extremely partial information to the public, and the public is like, "Ooh, NASA really is smart, and the standard scientific community is really smart." Well, of course, compared to the dribble that they're putting out on the other side, they do look good. But the whole point is, now let me jump back here. I did some observing on comet Ison, and it's moving up behind the planet Mars. So if you have a small telescope, backyard telescope, or binoculars, you can see it now moving next to Mars. And so if you walk out in the northern hemisphere, you look at the early morning sky, and I've had some good viewing mornings here recently. Last morning here was a bit bad, but some mornings were very good. And first, you see Jupiter up high in the sky, in the early morning sky, about, say, 4 in the morning. Look up high in somewhat the eastern sky, and you'll see that big white round ball that's Jupiter. Now, I'm not talking about the full moon, but it's about the size of like a big pen head at about 5 feet away. That's about, if you look down the barrel of a big pen, 5 feet away, that's about the size Jupiter is, very bright white. Now look off towards the eastern horizon where the sun rises, and you will see a reddish dot, rather small but not a star, reddish, and that's Mars. Now, from that vantage point, look to the left and actually down a little bit. It's just because our vantage point in the solar system, that's where the comet appears to be. But and what I'm hoping is that the interaction with Mars will cause it to brighten. Well, there again, the Tier 2 science says it's crossing the frost line. That's where comets brighten. Well, you know, the Tier 2 science is so partial. And the biggest comets in history were discovered beyond the orbit of Saturn. So now they're talking about this magical frost line that is near the orbit of Mars, where it could brighten quite a bit. Well, no, it's because it's interacting with Mars. And remember Comet Holmes a number of years ago? I predicted that on a certain date, Comet Holmes would brighten and go through a certain brightening. And, well, it's hard to predict how much. Well, on that given day, because it was in an electrical alignment with other planets, Comet Holmes expanded into the biggest comet in history. The explanation from NASA, oh, it must have gotten hit by an asteroid. An asteroid hit it. That's what caused this big, perfectly symmetrical round halo to occur around this comet and last for weeks and weeks, not just a little brush with an asteroid, couple-minute thing. No, it lasted for weeks and weeks and weeks. And it was perfectly symmetrically round and bigger. It became the biggest object in the solar system. The coma, that is the cloud around the nucleus of Comet Holmes, became bigger than the sun. And I observed that with my own equipment. And it was absolutely gigantic up in the night sky. And the NASA explanation, oh, an asteroid hit it. They have no proof of that. They have no inkling that an asteroid hit it, but it just happened to hit on the day that I predicted. And so, once again, any time I make a prediction, and that's what I did with Comet Ison, I said, as it approaches Mars, it's going to connect electrically with Mars, and it would brighten. It's going to go through a brightening phase. Well, the NASA explanation, oh, it's crossing the frost line. Huh. I mean, where do these people get this stuff? And then when I predicted, this prediction is still coming, for the mid-January 15th, about 10th to the 15th of January 2014, I predicted that Comet Ison, if it makes it around the sun and continues in its current orbit, would be in a direct lineal electrical alignment with Jupiter, the comet up and behind us, Earth, the new moon, and Venus. So we have a cross solar system electrical alignment, and it's going to be very far away. Comet Ison is not Nibiru. It's not going to crash into Earth. We're not all going to die. But the prediction I made was that it could connect with Earth, and if it's at that point connected out to that sulfur dioxide region around Jupiter, it could have a reddening effect. If Earth connected to that same comet tail, we could get an influx of sulfur dioxide in something that the ancients talked about. The ancients talked about it as the red hand of death. And that's a term, that's a biblical term that came from the ancients. And now I made it very clear that I didn't expect anybody on Earth to die. But the people misquoting me in the standard woo-woo press out there try and mix it with 2012, the Mayan calendar, we're all going to die, every comet is planet, Nibiru, you know, and they can now try and mix my work with that. And nobody, you know, would be any the wiser. Well, if you want to hear what I say, listen to my radio show. Read my webpage, because that's where my information is, not reinterpreted, reslanted by some Tier 3 outreach NASA clown. Okay? I never said anybody was going to die. I said there could be some severe weather, and that I expect. I expect possibly some January 15th hurricanes, something that, but there again, those are my predictions, and that the if we do connect into some auroral activity and some sulfur dioxide from the comet, if the tail jumps to Earth, and we connect in that respect, well, then we could see some activity. And no, we're not all going to die. In fact, I don't think anybody would die. But it's an effect that proves what the ancients were talking about thousands and thousands of years ago, when a big comet came near Earth and was connected out into that sulfur dioxide region of Earth. And yes, we did have a big major influx of red and reddish-orange color in the upper atmosphere, and it did poison the waters, and a lot of people died, a lot of animals died. That's the NOAA event. That's when Venus, the comet, came by Earth and caused what I call the red hand of death. That's the term that I'm using, but that doesn't mean that Comet Ison is going to kill us all with sulfur dioxide. No. Understand what I'm saying. And then the clowns, the NASA Tier 3 woo-woo guys, they have a wonderful platform, because NASA and the misinformation crew has created all of this nutcase stuff running around the internet, including my name, and it's just like YouTube is rampant. The misuse of my work, the misuse of my name, the twisting of things to all sorts of wild predictions. And so, like I say, when the NASA scientists come in with their official web page, they look pretty clean and spiffy. And that's the whole point, is to set them up on a little platform so when they speak, they sound authoritative and everybody should listen. Okay, so the real story for the near future here, Comet Ison is approaching Mars. It's going to be an October 1st close encounter at about 7 million miles. And I hope that all of you get to make some observations of Mars. Here's the other thing, is Mars very likely could get some sulfur dioxide input from the comet. But right now, remember that the comet is very small. The comet Ison, the comet of the century that was predicted by NASA, is not panning out to be the comet of the century. It's very small at this point. It is a very unnoteworthy comet, other than the fact that it's coming by Mars. So what I'm expecting, though, is that means it could brighten significantly here in the upcoming days. Then fast forward to November 10th to 14th, mainly the 13th and 14th, when Comet Ison will be coming in the back door of planet Mercury. And this will be a beautiful moonless, without the moon, sky. And so once again, the viewing that you're doing right now, Comet Ison near Mars, is just preparatory for the event, because when Comet Ison comes right neck to neck, right up the backside of planet Mercury, at that point the comet will be bigger, it will be discharging the much more powerful localized capacitor that's much stronger in the vicinity of the sun, and then little Mercury swings around. I think that's the era when we're going to start to see some decent CMEs starting to occur from the sun, and that's November 13th to 14th time frame. And are they going to hit Earth and kill everybody? Well, no, there's a small chance when CMEs, that's a coronal mass ejection, leaves the sun. The whole concept is that the whole surface of the sun lifts off. And by the way, this is one of the listener emails that I'm getting to here. I'm working up to this topic. One of the listener emails asks, how long do these solar flares affect Earth? And so I'm going to go into some detail on that. But this whole discussion is leading up to that that topic. So around that time frame, November 10th to 14th, I want all of you up in the morning sky with your binoculars or small telescope. And by the way, don't buy those long tube-like telescopes, refractor telescopes. There are much smaller table models that are great for comet viewing, but I have found that binoculars with a good tripod are the best equipment for viewing comets. And so this viewing of Mars that you're doing right now is just preparatory work for that viewing in November when it comes near Comet Mercury. And of course, NASA ain't talking about that one. They are not talking about that at all. But notably, that's when the NERC, the North American Electrical Reliability Corporation, has their exercise, their power outage exercise scheduled, which is very interesting timing, folks. And my friend John Moore, I'm on his show regularly, said that he has received information also from other sources, totally independent of me, within government agencies, who said they are afraid that that exercise is going to turn into a real event. And by the way, you don't just pull the plug on the power equipment of this country without causing some adverse effects. So that's a whole nother topic, that these guys are playing around with gasoline and matches and could have a very adverse effect with their little games that they are playing. Okay, so back to Comet Ison. November 10th to the 14th, but more specifically 13th and 14th, when Comet Ison comes back, a linear electrical alignment, Comet Mercury, the Comet Ison, and the Sun, and that's when I think we could see Comet Ison exploding into brightness, doing some real great activity. We could see some direct electrical connections. In fact, I'm just confident that we would see some direct electrical connections. And of course, NASA, with their good equipment, would see this and of course not report it to you, because that would prove that I'm correct. And then the possibility that the planet Mercury could go comet. And this is one of the best possibilities I have seen ever, that a planet could go comet. And that, what does that mean? That means that visibly Mercury could develop a comet tail, because it's big, it's a lot bigger. I would not be surprised. In fact, I'm even though Comet Ison is not developing as much as it should be, that close backdoor electrical alignment with Mercury is I would say a high probability, and you can never say 100%, but it's something. If the public saw Mercury go comet, and at that point even NASA should have its pictures coming in from amateurs all around the world, but see, they get to filter them. Isn't that a swell deal? Because they wouldn't have to show Mercury, and they just show Comet Ison. Probably it would be developing a nice electrical sunward spike at that point, and gee, then NASA could say, oh, that's just one of those optical illusions. But no, let's wait a minute. That's a perfect broadside view of Mercury and the comet. So if you see a spike coming out of the Comet Ison, on November 10th to 14th, that's a broadside view. In their little explanation that started with Comet Aaron Roldan back in the 1950s, 1957, that it's only an optical illusion type 2 tail, doesn't hold water. But just watch them come out in like a sing-song nursery rhyme, repeat it, like Mother Goose nursery rhyme, you know, they will be saying that if Comet Ison develops a sunward spike, which I believe, too, is a very good possibility. And also, because of that interaction with Mercury, we could see a helical spike, something that only occurs in the big, big comets. Look at the picture on the cover of my Planet X Comets and Earth Changes book. Clearly, some ancients were very impressed with a comet that had a helical spike. It was like a corkscrew. And look at the cover picture of my Planet X Comets and Earth Changes book, and you will see that Indian art rock painting from Green River, Utah, thousands of years ago, when the ancients saw a big comet passing through the solar system and took time to draw it, you can see that it's a helical sunward spike, a very powerful comet. Why is it helical? Because it's wrapping around, it's interacting, the electrical current is interacting with the local magnetic field of the comet. Why is there a magnetic field in the comet? Because of the electrical discharge. So other effects, the horns of the bull, the ancients talked about that. That's when comets get powerful and discharging. We could also see Comet Ison in a very luminescent state, lighting up like a light bulb. Remember the Comet Lemon this past year? Lighting up like a light bulb, a brilliant green, and scientists did not want to talk about that at all. They just don't want to talk about that luminosity issue with comets. And so listen to all of the things that I'm telling you that are observational factors in comets. And NASA gets away by talking about, oh, it might have carbon monoxide gas in the tail. That's what they get away with pawning off on the public. Garbage science. A guy who's a good physicist like Carrie Liss, and his job is to pass garbage off to you. Hide the good data, pass off a picture, maybe, oh boy, if they pass off a Hubble picture, everybody should be happy and send their money to NASA. Now, these guys deserve to be working in McDonald's flipping hamburgers. They're liars. By lying, they're cheating the public. And they're cheating the public from a fair review of all of this scientific work. And in the Tier 1 layers, they know exactly 100% sure that I am right about all of this. That's why they don't like this program. I was on Bill Deagle's program the other day, we were talking, and he just kind of opened up the mic to me, and he says, why is it that these people are so afraid of your comet message? And by the way, my work is not just simply with comets. That's one small aspect of my electrical solar system, electrical universe work. All of the galaxies, the stars, the galactic nuclei, the quasars, all are producing proton, excess proton in their fusion-based solar winds or stellar winds. This creates a capacitor and many, many, many physics effects. Once I understood that early in my early days of working with this entire problem, the whole laundry list of physics, how it affects our weather, the weather on other planets, how planets interact, how human beings interact with the electric field when other planets align with ours. Why does astrology have a logical, physical basis in reality? It's because the electrical conditions in the solar system affect the human psyche. Why is everybody upset some days and other days everybody's happy? Why is there a huge amount of crime during a full moon? You know, these are real effects, and they're electrical. They're not gravitational, they're electrical. And so why is there such a tremendous, unbelievable amount of work to push science, Tier 2 science off on the public, to maintain tens of thousands of scientists in that Tier 2 layer and give the facade of real science and then to the amount of effort being put into burying my message and not giving it a good review in the scientific community, other than mixing it with a bunch of nutcases that think every comet is Nibiru and pawn it off or push it off in that respect, that's what they get to do, because there is no real science today. There isn't any real science in the world of astronomy, space science, or astrophysics. Dark matter, another thing that people... Why did they invent dark matter? Nobody's ever discovered it, and nobody ever will discover it, just like the Oort cloud. Nobody will ever discover it. Why? Because it isn't there. But they get to keep chasing it, build bigger and bigger reactors. And why is this level of money and effort being put into just fairy tale science? Because on a worldwide scale, if the public woke up one day and recognized that, first of all, the universe is very easy to live in. There are designs designed so that we have a very easy way to travel in the universe electrically. We should all be driving electrical cars powered by wind power. By efficient wind power, not these three-blade monstrosity, tier two, completely inefficient systems that are scattered all over the countryside. That is absurd. The wind just blows right through there. There's nothing. They're the most inefficient thing ever invented by man. Why is all of this tier two science promoted? Because they have to keep people under the thumb of energy. Now they have to keep people under the thumb of water, water control, and which is one of my other listener emails that I'll be getting to in a minute here, about the new find of water in Kenya, control of water. Why is it so important to control the public's understanding of these events? And very simply, if the public woke up one day and understood that comets are not dirty snowballs, they can affect Earth, they can affect it with action at a distance, the public would lose interest in the leaders, because the equation in everybody's mind would be, well, those things are up there. These European bankers and all of their minions around in the Federal Reserve that operates the Congress and tells the Congress where to, you know, the bear goes in the woods, all of this would shut down and people would stop honoring the money god, which is worthless, a worthless money god. Wow, would things change overnight? They are deathly afraid of comets, because comets hold the key to changing public attitude on a worldwide scale. If there's a big, powerful comet up in the sky, that's why NASA has a team of scientists, a dozen scientists, ramping up information to collect all the photos that come in from amateurs around the world, filter them, and then put that information off to the public about Comet Ison, because they have to control the information going to the public. Why do they mix my information with a bunch of nutcases saying that Comet Ison is going to crash into Earth and kill us all when it's not true? Why would they do that? Why would they misrepresent my work? Well, they've got to try and neutralize me somehow. And that's the best thing they've come up with. The whole point is, if that the people in mass around the world start looking up in the sky and see this big comet flailing up there, a luminosity green or blue or whatever other color happens to be based on the chemistry of the tail, or if they see the red hand of death, the sulfur dioxide, and once again, that's just a term, it doesn't mean we're all going to die. It's just a term. It's an ancient historical term that's valid to use because it describes that effect. If people start seeing this, they're going to go, hey, the Federal Reserve, Ben Bernanke, and little Obama, his minion, or the world bankers, they don't have control over this. Why am I paying for insurance that won't pay pay out. Why am I paying interest on a house that's overvalued? Why am I buying a SUV on interest and paying and driving up and down the road 5 days a week so that I can not own anything? People would change their attitudes. The whole concept of how you should live would change. What if you found out that you could be driving a car that would last 50 years with an electric motor in it, and with no moving parts, no muffler, no use of oil, our housing should be built efficiently so that we're not using all of this unbelievable amount of energy just to heat a house in the wintertime? What if everybody woke up and one day changed their lifestyle? No more massive use of energy. No more control of water so that the people in the world have fresh water. Everybody has a right to fresh water. We don't deal with banks that have invisible funny money and loan it at exorbitant interest rates. No, we revert back to a congressionally mandated money that is created in the original manner for this country, not borrowed money from a bunch of European bankers who don't have any more money than you and me. People would change, and the key to doing that would be their understanding of the universe, its electrical, and as I've described in my books, the Diamond Principle book, the Atlantis to Tesla book, shows that there are electrical propulsion systems for us to move freely in space. That's our birthright. This belongs to us. Free water is our birthright, the ability to have clean water. So at any rate, what that would allow people to wake up and change the way they live. No more 40-hour a week jobs that allow you to pay interest. No more slavery, or the concept that somehow you're chasing the dollar and you're going to get ahead. You're never going to get ahead. It's not made for you to get ahead. Every time you think you're getting ahead, you're going to get slammed down and dunked by one of the other collection agencies that come out of the banks or the government. So don't worry about getting ahead. It ain't going to happen. So at any rate, what does this have to do with comets? Comets hold the key because, like I said, if people looked up in the sky, and that's why if they looked up in the sky and saw this big raging comet, they go, these people here, the little Obamacare ain't going to do anything for me when this baby comes by. I better get my act together and take care of me and my own, because the big government FEMA truck, the only thing they're going to have in the back of that truck is a body bag. They're not going to have food or medical equipment or water or anything else. So get a clue. But understand that 98% of the people out there don't have a clue. And they're running around like they live in a world and they're smart and they went to college and they have a degree. Wow. Don't try and impress me. Don't try and impress me at all with that, please. So at any rate, that's why comets are important. That's why understanding them is important, if not just for the scientific benefit of understanding how the universe around you works. Okay, so at any rate, we're going to have some good observing coming up here. Remember, later November, we have the comet Ison also diving into the sun. That'll be very interesting. And if we have solar flaring around that time, which I suspect we're going to, the other thing that I have predicted is that, remember, NASA has to have this in place, that comets cannot cause solar flares. Nope, it can't cause solar flares. Why is that important? Because they're going to use solar flaring to pull a real power outage, a false flag power outage. And that's a push, a control move. And I think they have to do this before Comet Ison swings around the sun and is up there in the sky for everybody to see in everybody's mental equation to kick in, going, hey, these European bankers don't have any control over this baby. And Velikovsky was right, that comets can be big and it can affect Earth. And if that thing were any closer, we'd be in big trouble. And that means that someday some bigger one is going to come close to Earth. And so the European bankers and this Tier 2 science that they're feeding up is a bunch of baloney. So before that happens in November, I think that they're going to pull the power plug. They got to do it to gain control, to send the people into the dark ages, literally, and then come on and dribble out power to here, to there, and everybody will be waiting in line to get their gasoline. Everything will be controlled. When you go to the bathroom, when you put on your underwear, when you have light at your house, and everybody will be thankful for their 5 minutes of electrical lighting so they can quick get all their things done, wash their dishes, flush their toilet, and whatever else goes on, wash their clothes, and they'll be, oh my goodness, the government is giving me my 5 minutes of electricity. How happy I should be when there's the Wizard of Oz up there pulling the levers, controlling everything. And I think they got to do it before this comet Ison swings around, fills up the sky, and everybody figures out that it's the biggest ruse on the planet. Not just the people who are listening to this show, or the John Morris show, or the Bill Deagle show, or the Joyce Riley shows. Not just those people, everybody. And all of a sudden, other people are going, well, yeah, I knew about this all along. I listened to Jim McCanney's show. Well, who's Jim McCanney? Well, I better start listening to that too. You just can see this coming down, and they got to stop this from growing, because it's growing at a big rate. More and more people are listening to these shows every day. Believe me, I know. And so do these other talk show hosts. They all know what's going on. Their crowds, their audiences are growing, but still, we have small audiences compared to the bulk of people in the world. But one day, snap, everybody could wake up, and it would be a quick networking amount of information. You might be able to hear the thunder in the background here. Have a beautiful rain going on, thunder. And by the way, none of this would be going on if it weren't for electricity in the universe. Okay, I better get off to my listener comments here. The questions came in on email. Here's one. Newfound water in Kenya. This was discovered by satellite. A satellite owned by Radar Technologies International. It was part of the... funded by UNESCO, which is the United Nations Education, Scientific, and Cultural Organization. And right there, this rings of international New World Order control, because we all know that the United Nations stopped being what it was supposed to be a long time ago. And it is a central nervous system for things going on in the world. And so for them to be funding water searching by a new radar technology, by the way, this radar technology grew out of searching for oil with the same technique, looking for oil reserves underneath the ground, you know, 100 feet, 200, 300 feet under the ground. This is not deep reserve mining or searching. And so what they discovered, they're searching for water now just under the surface of the Earth, and they figured they've discovered 200 billion cubic meters of fresh water, which is 9 times the current water reserve of Kenya in one particular reserve. And Kenya has a population that says 41 million. 17 million of them lack safe water, and other 28 million do not have adequate sanitation. So this could be an amazing boon for Kenya. However, the question is, who is going to own the water? Is it the guy on the street in Kenya? No, no, no. Who is putting satellites up to look at to search for water? Well, I've already talked about this. My latest book, ebook Water, discusses this. Who owns water? Who's out there searching for it, and these scientists make me puke, because what do? They're operating all of this technical equipment, and where does the ownership of this information go? It goes up the ladder to the European bankers who are going to own this water, and the poor guy on the street in Kenya is probably not going to have any more water then in the future than he has right now, because they're going to have to pay for it. They're going to have to pay someone, and they're already talking about the control of this water for future generations. It's always for those future generations. We're really going to take care of this. So anyway, this is something I'll be watching closely, because it's a topic that's near and dear to my heart. In my water book, I declared a declaration of independence of water, that everybody on earth has the right to clean, fresh water. Clearly, a country like Kenya is in desperate need of water. That's a drought-stricken area for a long time. But who is going to own this water? Who's going to distribute this water? And who is going to keep the population from having access to this water? Who is searching for the water? Why are they putting this money into it? And where is that information going? So a lot of questions to ask about this water find in Kenya. They say that they will probably discover 3 or 4 more such reserves. Okay, so here's the other listener mail. And by the way, this was part of the whole lead-up discussion here of my show, talking on Comet ISON and all of the politics, etc., the misinformation going down today on the Internet, YouTube. But a listener email comes in. It says, length of solar flare effects. Here's the listener who says, "Hi, I've been listening to your radio show lately. I really enjoy it. I know that you're really busy, can't answer emails. Maybe you can answer this on your show if you think it's a good question. The solar system is like a capacitor due to the protons being pushed out by the sun. When there are solar flares, are there then pockets of higher charge in the direction of the flares that extend into the solar system? How long do they last? Thank you." And then the listener's name. And I typically don't give out names just because to protect the public, basically. But wonderful question. And this this is amazing. Now, here's a woman who's been listening to the show for a while. Has been catching up on the gist of my work. You know, clearly not a tier one scientist or even a tier two scientist, does not show any claim to having a special scientific training in the email. Usually they do. If people are an engineer or something, they'll tell me in the email, you know, that this is my training or whatever, but no mention of that. So here's what I would consider an average person on the street understanding and expanding in their mind on my work and asking a real intelligent question, which raises the question, why can't NASA scientists who got PhDs, they're supposedly trained in physics and other top-level sciences, can't ask an intelligent question or imagine an intelligent question? Okay, so anyway, I want to get into this topic because it's really a good question. How long do these solar flares last, and does that push out another excess of positive charge, creating in a larger capacitor in the direction of the flare? And if you read my books and look at through the information in my books, all this is answered there, but it's a deep subject. This is a very complicated topic. Plasma dynamics, and so, but this is an excellent question, so anyway, the answer is yes. The solar flare is an excess positive charge over and above what the solar wind is pushing out all the time. The solar wind that's constantly there is, remember, it's due to what we call coronal holes. Let's go back to the sun. The sun is a nuclear furnace up in the upper atmosphere. Remember that the core model fusion, the core fusion model of the sun is totally incorrect. It's not the source of heating of the sun. The heating of the sun is up in the upper atmosphere, where there's a fusion electrical fire, hydrogen, deuterium, and all the way up through the heavier elements. but primarily hydrogen, helium and deuterium and the base elements. But something happens. The sun is like a super atom with a base positive charge on the atmosphere, and then around the sun in relativistic velocity orbits are electrons. So it basically creates what I call a super atom. This is the same concept as ball lightning, where the lightning splits apart the water molecules, the oxygen goes away, and basically you're left with a hydrogen, the nuclei of the hydrogen atoms are rotating around each other, being locked together by relativistic magnetic fields. And around that is a beehive of relativistic electrons moving in orbit. So basically you have a super atom that can live and exist for a period of time. The sun is different because it has a gravitational field due to its massive core, which is a solid, cold, planetary-type core. And up in the atmosphere, you have the fusion fire going on. Above that, like I say, you have orbiting electrons. And so what happens? These orbiting electrons begin to develop holes, and it's like a screen. It's like you took a metal mesh screen, built it up to a high voltage, and then sent a bunch of protons into the region. They would all go shooting out the screen. Some of them would hit the screen, but the rest would go shooting out and keep going. That's what causes the solar wind. So the electron shield around the sun opens up holes and the protons come flying out. During special solar flare events and CMEs, this process is augmented to where the flares don't just wrap up and loop up and come back around, but they keep going out with a tremendous amount of force. These are the solar flares, sometimes caused by comets, not all the time. Although recently, the only solar flares that we've seen, the only decent ones, have been caused by comets, action at a distance. So the answer is that yes, say Earth, for example, is in the middle of one of these solar flares. And by the way, standard science doesn't have any explanation for any of this. So anyway, the solar flare passes by Earth. There is an increase in the local discharge of that solar capacitor, Earth acting like a comet. And so that causes extreme weather, compression of our local magnetic field, and a whole laundry list of physical effects that actually affect Earth or one of the other planets. If the couple planets are aligned, that can cause even a bigger effect because the electrical discharge crosses interplanetary space. I'm just about out of time here. Remember, go to the webpage jmccsci.com. All of the water filter products are there, things that you need in everyday life and in emergency, and all my books, DVDs, CDs, and I will see you next week. This is James McCanney. This is my Science Hour, and as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.